Jewish audio on Kabod.org.
This class is presented by Rabbi Moshe New, rabbi at the Montreal Torah Center in Montreal, Canada.
It's this week's Torah portion, and we are told, we are commanded with respect to the Omer. What is an Omer? An Omer is a measure of grain. You can see on page 621, right-hand side, footnote, Omer. This is one-tenth of an ephah, the daily measure of manna, and the usual measure for a meal offering. The meal offering was the accompanying grain offering that accompanied every sacrifice in the temple. It was usually an omer's amount. It is about 2 quarts. The omer offering consisted of barley. So what you just read was this. I'll paraphrase it now in simple English. The Torah says like this. On the second day of Pesach, which in Israel is no longer Yom Tov, it's the intermediate day. So actually, specifically, the night of the second day of Pesach, which means the end of the first night, the court in Jerusalem would go out to a pre-designated field and cut these few quarts, it took a little bit extra to make sure, of barley, of grain. And then it would be taken the next morning to the temple. There in the temple precincts it would be winnowed, which means the kernel separated from the stalk and the chaff around the kernel. And then it would be lightly roasted. Then it would be ground into very fine flour, and then sifted 13 times, if I'm not mistaken. And then mixed with oil. This is all, you just read this, I'm just adding some detail from the Talmud. And a small fistful would be burnt upon the altar, and the remainder, before that. This mixture now of flour and oil was placed in a pan. It was waved in all 6 directions by one of the Kohanim who were on duty at the time. A small measure was burnt on the altar, and the remainder distributed amongst the Kohanim who were on duty for that day or that week, and they would be able to consume that in the temple courtyard. What's the purpose of this offering? This was brought one offering on behalf of the entire population. It was a thanksgiving, essentially, to God, expression of thanksgiving and gratitude for the beginning of the harvest season, barley being the first grain to ripen. Okay? Then the Torah says, in the next page that you just read, the counting of the Omer. From the day you bring that Omer offering, what are we supposed to do? Count. The Torah commands that we count 49 days, 7 weeks. The end of that period, day 50, is a Yom Tov, a holy day. On that day, another offering is brought on behalf of the people. This time it's made of wheat, and it's 2 breads. And again, these 2 events, the barley offering, the Omer offering, and the 2 breads offered on Shavuot, are connected by a count, which each individual is to count 49 days. And the 50th day is the holiday we call Shavuot. Shavuot means weeks because it comes at the end of the 7 weeks. Sheva means 7. Shavuot means a week because a week has 7 days. Incidentally, we'll get to this later, why should a week have 7 days? Why should it? Why does it? A month has 30 days because that's the cycle of the moon. A year has approximately. A year has 365 days because that's the cycle of the rotation of the sun in its relationship with the earth. But why should a week have 7 days? Why? You know, who believes in creation? You know that the Russians, I think it was in the 50s, some might remember this, tried to abolish the 7-day week, and in its place, I think it was a 9-day cycle or a 10-day cycle. It didn't work. notwithstanding the totalitarian government, an atheistic secular society, it didn't work. You know why there are 7 days in the week? Human beings just feel very comfortable with dividing time that way. Well, later on we'll talk about that. Back to our discussion. Okay, now where does this count come from? This mitzvah that we just read about and I just told you about. Where does it originate? What's the meaning, what's the significance of this countdown, which each individual is supposed to do? The origin is, as the commentaries explain, is as follows. When the Jews left Egypt, they were told that in 7 weeks they're going to receive the Torah. So they were so excited that they spontaneously, voluntarily, counted the days. And that's the reason when God gave the Torah, so impressed was he with this spontaneous count, that he made that one of his commandments, that every year thereafter, Jews should count this period. I think last week we asked the question, well, why are we counting? We got the Torah already. They counted spontaneously because they hadn't received it yet. They were very excited about this great and wonderful gift. But we have it already. But this was last week, was it not? Yeah. But I'm trying to lead up to tonight's question. There's always a question of the night. And we're trying to get there. And this is the question. Two things, really. You ask anybody, what are we celebrating on Shavuos? What's really the bottom line? What do we say in the prayer book on Shavuos? How do we define this time? It's the giving of the Torah. And that's where the count comes in again, right? Because how did the count originate? Because Jews counted. They didn't count down, mind you, which was last week's question too. They counted up. You'd think they would have counted down. Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But 49 to go, 48 to go, 47. That was again last week. But anyway, they counted the days in anticipation and in build-up to the giving of the Torah. But yet, when you read about the commandment, which we just did, in the Torah, to count these days, did you find a reference to the fact that day 50 was the day the Torah was given? Take a moment, we'll hit the pause button, read page 620. The question is, in summary, that where the Torah commands us to count down, or count up, to Shavuot, the whole reason for the count is the build up, the countdown to the festival of the giving of the Torah, that is not mentioned, it's missing. Torah makes no reference to the fact in explaining why we're counting. Question number one. Second question. You have to know something about the Jewish calendar and the way it works, and the way it used to work, and the way it works today. The Jewish calendar follows the moon, essentially. A Jewish month literally follows the cycle of the moon, which means to say, if you look up in your Jewish calendar, let's say, day one of a Jewish month, look up in the sky that night, you'll see the barest sliver of the new moon. If you look up at the sky, at the moon, on day 15 of any Jewish month, you're going to see a full moon. And it wanes then, and then waxes and wanes. Not so the secular calendar that simply divides 365 days by 12. The months are not lunar. Even though the word month is essentially what? It means moon, does it not? Somehow? Somewhere? I think it does. Anyway, but the months are not related in any way with the moon cycle. Our calendar is. Incidentally, that means as follows. Well, not incidentally. The cycle of the moon cycle is 29 and a half and a fraction on top of that. What does this mean? You can't have a month ending at 2:45 and 16 seconds and 5 parts. So what does this mean practically speaking? Tell me, if a month has 29 and a half and a fraction days, 12 months in the year, what are you going to expect to find? And half of them are going to have, half the month will have how many days? 30, and the other half will have 29. That more or less balances it. Not quite, a little more complex than that, but in general, that's what you're going to find. You know that some Jewish months have 30 days and some have 29. You know that there's some days, some months have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. 2 days that mark the beginning of the month. And they're both semi-festive. Why is that? Because that meant that the previous month had 30 days. And day 30 is already really part of the next month. So it's already celebrated on some measure as the next month. And thus, some month will have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. You know that means that the previous month had 30 days. If a month has only 1 day Rosh Chodesh, it means the previous month had only 29 days. And it's 6 and 6, and it more or less balances out. Now, when the temple stood, this was not predetermined. Our calendar is now fixed. We know which months, which years will have 29, will have 30. It's a very elaborate system that dates back 1900 years and follows the moon cycle to incredible precision. Modern, contemporary, what's the astronomy, accords with and bears out the accuracy of the Jewish calendar as it was fixed many years ago. But prior to that time, the Torah says, God says, don't predetermine the months. It's going to be something that you determine on a month-to-month basis, based on a whole lot of factors, the primary one being when witnesses would come to Jerusalem, to the high court, and say, last night, or this morning, early morning, we saw the new moon, and depending on what day that was, based on that, they would declare that day the first day of the month. So a month, you never knew in advance, could have 29 days or 30 days. And that's why, dear friends, this is parenthetic, but let's throw this in for your interest and knowledge. Why don't we have 2 days Pesach and 2 days Sukkot and so on? And in Israel, they don't. What's the origin? It's all of this. The problem was, because the calendar wasn't fixed, you didn't know when is Sukkot going to be. Torah says the 15th day of the month. Yeah, but when did the previous month end? So if you lived near Jerusalem in Israel, you could find out in those 2 weeks when the court had established the first day of the month. But in the diaspora, they couldn't know. So they kept 2 days out of doubt. Did the previous month have 29 days? Did the previous month have 30 days? The only possibility. And we continue that tradition for reasons we can't go into now, or we won't, even today, even after the calendar is fixed. We still continue that all holidays outside Israel are 2 days. But the historical origin of that is, they didn't know. When did the court establish Rosh Chodesh? Was it day 30? Or day 31 of the previous month? Was the 30th day now the first day of the next month? Or were there no witnesses? It was a cloudy night, and by default, day 31 is going to be the first day. So not knowing, they kept 2 weeks... 2 days, I'm sorry, out of doubt. You follow? This is more detail, but you get the basic idea. So here's the question I'm building up to tonight. Every Jewish holiday is set by a day in the month. Every holiday. Pesach, Shavuos, not Shavuos. That's the exception. But Pesach, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, biblical, rabbinic holidays like Hanukkah and Purim. It's a certain day of the month. Now, follow this carefully. When the Jews left Egypt, so how did the whole count begin? What happened? They were told in 7 weeks, you're going to get the Torah. They counted 49 days. On day 50, God gives the Torah. That year, right, there are 2 months in these 50 days. Spans 2 months. That year, one of them was 29 days, and one of them was 30. That's what it was that year. Which meant that day 50 was the sixth day of Sivan. That was the day on the calendar. The sixth day of Sivan, the sixth day of the third month of the Jewish calendar, was the day when God gave the Torah. And that was day 50. Problem. In future years, after the Torah is given, and the courts and the temple exists, and the months are fluid, no longer fixed, there's no guarantee that these 2 months will be 29 and 30. They could be both 29, they could be both 30. What does that mean? Tell me the problem I'm arriving at. That day 50 is not going to coincide with the 6th of Sivan. If both months are deficient, we call it, 29, then day 6 will be day 40, the 6th of Sivan will be the 49th day of your count. If both days are 30, then the 6th of Sivan will be the day later. So here's the question. We're told to count 49 days, like they did. And day 50 is the day when is Yom Tov. What's the Yom Tov about? The giving of the Torah. Well, it's very, not anymore because the calendar is fixed, but it did happen in the past very often that the day which we're celebrating Yom Tov, the 50th day of the count, is not the 6th of Sivan, which is the calendar event when the Torah was given. And every other holiday is uniformly determined by the date in the month. Is that not strange? So our two questions tonight are, number one, why doesn't Scripture mention that your counting is towards the giving of the Torah? It doesn't say that. We know that's when it happened, but Torah doesn't say it. Question number two, it happened many times, clearly, when for the hundreds of years the temple stood, and they were determining each month on a month-to-month basis based on witnesses. It did happen, clearly, that there were many years when people counted their count, day 50, and it wasn't the day on the calendar where God gave the Torah. The day before, the day later. You follow? Very strange. Okay, that's tonight's question. Now the answer. We explained last week, why are there 49 days anyway between these two events? It's kind of an overview, we explained, as follows. You have a question? Yeah, we explained this. I'm just going to repeat what we said last week a little bit. The human soul has seven emotions. Why do we have seven emotions? Because man is created in the image of God. Since when does God have an image? You might be asking. Actually, Scripture says man is created in the form of God. B'tzelem Elokim. Perish the thought. God has a form. What does this mean? B'tzelem. Form. Answer, God transcends all form, physical and even spiritual. However, He has chosen to express Himself, reveal, project His presence. This is the Kabbalah for tonight, okay? Via a system. And we stress the word system because that's the objective. To create a divine system that we finite human beings can relate to. Because we can't relate to formlessness. We can't relate to infinite. And beyond infinite, as we shall presently see. We're human. So God chooses to project and express Himself in a structured way. And He gives rise to, or expresses Himself via a system. A thing called a system. The notion of a system is a decision on God's behalf. To make a thing called system. And then to make a thing called numbers. And then to choose 10 as the basic unit. And to divide that further into 2, 3, and 7. 7 being the hands-on attributes of God via which He creates, sustains, and relates to His creation. And that's why 7 is the basic number for time. Because God creates the world in 7 days, and the reason He creates in 7 days is because each day employs another divine emotion. That's why 7 days, and that's why human beings just find it very normal to divide the week into 7 days. Because it reflects the fundamental truth that the world is a consequence of the 7 attributes of God, whether we are aware of them or not. So man is created in the image of God. We too have 7 emotions. Let's list them, just so we put you out of your misery. Because you're wondering, what on earth are these 7 emotions? And I can't possibly do justice to them by listing them, because they are very nuanced and complex. No, we make them complex. But they're nuanced, that's the word for them. Anyway, here are the 7 emotions, just to give you some notion. The first one, Hebrew, it's called chesed. Chesed would be translated as love, attraction, benevolence, bestowal, giving. Emotion number 2. So there's the divine love, the divine bestowal, the divine, and the human love. Emotion number 2, gevura. Translation, or discipline. Justice, severity, withdrawal. You might pick up the common thread as I'm saying these words. You may not, but they're really essentially one thing. But Let's move on. Emotion number three, attribute number three. Tiferes in Hebrew. Translation? Beauty, harmony, synthesis, compassion. Emotion number four. Netzach in Hebrew, English. Victory, endurance, staying power. That's number four. Five, Hod, surrender, humility, thankfulness. Emotion number six, Yesod, connection, bonding, empathy, communication. And the seventh, the most enigmatic of all, Malchut in Hebrew, sovereignty, nobility, the sense of one's unique place in the world, in God's world, that needs no justification to be. Anyway, they are the seven emotions listed and feebly translated, feebly rendered into English. Each emotion cannot or should not and does not exist independent of the others. So, accordingly, there is love of love, there's awe of love, there's compassion within love, there's harmony within love, and so on. So, if all the emotions are interwoven with each other, make the calculation, 7 times 7. So that's the 49 days. 49 days of spiritual growth. 49 days of disentanglement from the wrong kind of emotional relationships to the right kind. Or if they are right, make them deeper, better, truer, more focused. That's what this period is. It's a period of intense emotional refinement as each week during this Omer period, we deal with another one of the emotions in the array of human emotions in the seven. And each day we deal with that other emotion as it's part of that one. So today we are in the third week. Last night was 20. Which means we're in the third week, the sixth day of the third week. Correct? 14 and 6 is 20. That means this whole week we've been dealing with compassion. But today we're dealing with the sixth emotion within compassion, bonding within compassion. What does that mean? It means many things. Amongst other things, it would mean something like, we have to see to that our compassion isn't a one-time expression of compassion, but it creates a bond between the one who bestows and the receiver. Just to be brief. So each day it's another challenge, another detail in our emotional makeup, and it's a time of profound spiritual growth. And that's why, by the way, this is the deeper spiritual significance of the fact that it begins with a barley offering and ends with a bread, wheat offering. Barley is animal fodder. We're going from unrefined animal state. Animal simply means self-serving. That's the definition of bad in Judaism, is self-serving. Because if that's what it is, you know, that's, the rest is just detail. We're going from barley to wheat to bread, from animal to mensch, to the refined state. That's what these offerings symbolize, this process of refinement. I won't say transformation, channeling. We don't become something other, we just channel and direct these emotions where they should go. So we have to count 49 days. On the 50th day is Yom Tov. What does 50 represent? 50 represents the infinite. Well, now you know why. Because 7 is the 7 days of creation. 7 is the system. 7 times 7 is the details of the system. 50 represents a step beyond the system. 50 is transcendence. Infinite. 7 times 7 is the analysis of the finite, and 50 represents the infinite. So what's God saying? Every year we go through this process, as we explained last week. Our relationship with God is to be a living, ongoing relationship. I don't think I made this point, but I'm going to say it now. The word, I did. There's nothing in Judaism which is traditional. or there ought not be. Tradition is, what's the word I was looking for? Did anybody check it out? The E-N-E-S-T-H-E-M-A something or other. Yeah, thank you. The anathema, which means the opposite of, it's, they can't coexist simultaneously. To Judaism, because Judaism is about a living relationship with God, and the word tradition means we do it because someone else did something, or because something happened to somebody else. And it's significant. We remember and we recall. No. We don't remember, we don't recall. Okay, we remember, we recall. In order to live it ourselves on a level no one ever lived it before. That's life. Nothing in life is stationary. I think we said that. Nothing. It's an illusion to things to think that anything can remain the same from 1 millisecond to the next. It's either eroding, it's either falling apart, or it's building up. Nothing can be stationary. And certainly relationships cannot be stationary. We're either getting closer, or we've grown apart. One simply cannot maintain anything for the next moment. It's one way or the other. Physical things can't. Certainly spiritual things. And if we think we're maintaining it, that's the biggest proof that we're actually drifting. So, 49 days we count. We go through this process every year, deeper and deeper and deeper. Readying ourselves for the great marriage, the personal marriage and the cosmic marriage at Sinai. Sinai is the marriage between God and the Jew. Every year we enter that marriage on a deeper level. Discovering more of each other, as it were, as we explained last week. Now, we count 49 days, not 50. Why don't we count 50 days already? If Shavuos happens on the 50th day, so why don't we count 50 days? Why don't we stop at 49? Because you can't count the 50th day. It's an inaccessible level. You can say the number 50. But what that day means is a gift of the infinite that you can't reach. It's beyond our grasp. It's God's gift. So we count 49, and then the 50th day is bestowed, as it were. It means this, using the metaphor of a marriage. The 49 days means, as the couple work in developing their relationship, in understanding each other, in communicating, in expressing all of the nuances and of their persona, engaging each other in a richer and deeper way than ever before. That's what the 49 days means. It's with God, right? The metaphor is a marriage. Marriages should work quite the same way. Not just 7 weeks out of the year. It's every day, but this is the time of year when this becomes the model, which inspires the rest of the year's behavior. So the 49 days, it's a process, you know, step by step, deeper. We appreciate each other, express ourselves more fully, more resonant, more richer. But then there's a level of mystery in the relationship that you can't access within each other via a process of workshop or discussion or talk. It's mysterious. There's a mysterious bond between husband and wife, that you just can't define. That's the 50th level. That's the infinite level, if you like. Likewise with Torah, with God. There's that part of the relationship with God. We learn, we understand, we study, we experience, we grow from level to level, from stage to stage. We study Torah on ever deepening planes, and then we realize that there is a divine mystery to all of this. A transcendent mystery that is breathtakingly astonishing. But the thing is, you see, you only discover that mystery if you've gone through the steps, the process of reason. When did the couple discover the mystery in each other? It's only after, or as a consequence, of exploring the accessible, the conscious, meaning of mind and heart, engaging in a very deep and meaningful way, opens up the window, the door to an experience that is beyond description. The 50th level is a mystery, and it's a gift, and it's transcendent. but it's only conferred if you count the 49 days. You won't taste the mystery of Torah if you haven't studied the logic of it all, the reason, the structure. If you explore the structure, explore the reason, you follow what I'm saying? The accessible, intellectual part, then that will lead you to its mystery, as in the marriage. If we engage each other, communicate, talk, work at it, develop it, we're left with more than just a very developed partnership. It leads to a very mysterious, transcendent connection. But again, only arrived at after the process. It's similar to the following strange kind of statement that it says in the Mishnah, in the Talmud, in the Ethics of Our Fathers. No, it says this in the Talmud, elsewhere. And it says like this. If you toil, if you strive, in Hebrew, yagaita, matzata, you'll find. So, Chassidus asks, a metzia, a find, is something which comes unexpectedly. Like a find, you know, you find a metzia, a bargain, you chance upon it. So it's a contradiction. If you toil, you find? No. If you toil, you attain. You reach. You don't find. You get there. This Hebrew word, matzata, metzia, means something that's totally unexpected. A find. So if it's unexpected, the toil isn't what precipitated it. So we would think that the quotation should say this. That if you toil, you'll reach your objective. You'll get there, you'll attain. Right? It doesn't say that. It says if you toil, and the answer is precisely what we're talking about now. The person toils in Torah, toils in a relationship, exploring the limits of it to the human capacity. You end up with then confronting the transcendent as a gift. A find indeed that's totally beyond your investiture. You get much more than you invested. You confront an exquisite mystery that can't be put into words, that doesn't fit into the structure. You go as far as limitations can take you. And then the infinite is granted. You count 49 days, and day 50 is given. No point in counting it, because numbers don't get you there. By numbers we mean system and process and step by step of self-refinement. Refine yourself to the degree that you can. God says, I'll take you to a place that you could never go. But only take you there if you come to the border. Come to the edge. Come to your own personal border. And then you'll be taken away. Soaring to heights that are totally beyond whatever you've experienced till now. And you couldn't even explain them afterwards. But there's more. There's more. Because as we said tonight, and we observed in our study here of Scripture, Torah says count 49 days, and then there's day 50, it's Shavuos. What's missing here? What doesn't it say? What was that question earlier tonight? What doesn't it say the day the Torah was given? And then we asked, moreover, the day the Torah was given, which is the 6th of Sivan, doesn't even necessarily coincide with day 50. In theory, when the months were not predetermined. What does this mean? What are we being told here? Torah is telling us there's a third level to Torah. There's a third level to the marriage. What could that possibly be? We've said 49 is the finite level, the conscious level. 50 is the supra-conscious level, the transcendent, the infinite, the mystery. The transcendence, what's beyond transcendence? Good question, huh? So we've learned here in the past that there's a third level. We use the word level for want of a better word, but it's not level. And to put it simply, because there's no other way to say it, but simply, the third level is God Himself, who is beyond even infinite. Because even infinite's a description. It's a word, is it not? It's not a direct word. It's an indirect word. Still a word. After all, infinite is defined by not being finite. So there's a relationship to finite. Didn't we say that you get the 50th level if you've gone through the 49? Does that not imply that there is a relationship? If you haven't gone, you haven't studied Torah on its incredibly profound intellectual level, then of course you'll never know its mystery. The mystery is only after you've studied. You can't relate to the mystery in your spouse if you don't engage, talk, mind to mind, heart to heart. So it's mysterious and it's transcendent and it's infinite. But as the very word infinite implies, it comes after finite in some way. You go to the edge. All right. God takes you the rest of the way to a whole new vista, a whole new experience. Yeah, but the boat only takes off if you're at the shore. You don't get there. You don't get on that mystery boat. That magical tour. So there's a third level. The third level is God Himself. In the Torah, there's a third level. It's not the intellectual stuff. It's not even all the mystery, the Kabbalah, if you like. Kabbalah is kind of the 50th mystery level. There's a third level to Torah. What's that? It's God's word. It's just godly. Godly. How do we define that? Sorry, can't define that. Not directly or indirectly. Can't call it even magical or mysterious. Now that level, here comes the beautiful paradox. Because there's always a paradox every Wednesday night. I think that consistently, I would hope so, because all truth comes in paradox. If you don't hit an irony or a paradox, then we're just playing around. You want to be honest, then there's got to be a paradox. The paradox here is that the third level of Torah, the fact that it's godly, period, everybody gets that. God gives that to everyone. Whether you count or you don't count. Whether one has explored the intellectual system of Torah, or tasted or confronted its mystery, which is the 50th level, the essence level, that's a given. God gives that to every Jew. Let's put it in different words. You're doing a mitzvah. A person's lighting Shabbos candles, eating the matzah, whatever it is, on the Seder night. So there might be one person, their consciousness is such, they've learned about the meaning of the matzah and the whole story of Passover and so on. And when they eat the matzah, they have engaged their mind and their heart, and they are experiencing all the reason and the beauty and the logic and the justification behind the eating of matzah. And there's a higher level. This person's explored that and has even seen the mystery of the matzah. The Kabbalistic dimension, if you like. But it's even beyond that. Thoroughly having learned all of its logic, to whatever degree that person can, they've touched the 50th level. And as they eat the matzah, it's much more than just a reason and a logic and an intellectual and emotional experience. It's a magical experience. They truly experience the transcendence, the 50th holy, infinite energy that's in matzah. What's the third level within matzah? It connects you to God. God said, eat matzah. You do that, you connect to God. And that happens to every Jew that eats matzah. Whether they've understood the reason, touched its transcendence, the third essence level, the truth, the essential, deepest truth of what matzah is. It's God's commandment. And He's invested His very essence in it. That is a given to every Jew. Matzah is an example. Looking at anything in Judaism, there's the same three levels. There's the conscious level, there's the transcendent level, and the essence of it. Shabbos, kosher, whatever. Torah in general. Now, answer the question that we asked, the two questions we asked tonight. Why doesn't it say here that you count 49 days and you count, and the 50th day, that's the day when the Torah is given? Second question was, but the 50th day doesn't even necessarily coincide with the 6th of 7th, the day the Torah is given in the calendar. That's the day. Now you have the answer. Here we're talking about in this passage the two lower levels. The 49 level that you got to explore yourself, the conscious study level, then the 50th level which God confers. But the Torah doesn't want to mix in the third level. That's a given. And it's independent of the other two. It doesn't even always come out in the same day. As if the Sefer Torah is saying, even if you don't count to go through this, I gave myself to you. My very essence is invested in the Torah. And that's a given to every Jew, whether you count this day or you don't count these days. Whether you go through the finer or the infinite, the transcendence, that you follow? It's not in the story. In this context, to convey this profound truth, that the sixth of Sivan, which ultimately celebrates the day when God says, I give me to you, you're all getting that. God says to every Jew, whether you go through this process, but please do go through this process. Because I want you to understand it. I want you to see the mystery of it all. And I want you to explore it and experience it in this conscious or superconscious level. I'm begging you, please do it. But you're still Jews nonetheless. And the essence of Torah is a given to you irrespective. So it's not even on the page. It's another page. But not in the context of the count. Because the count is my investiture. The third level is not dependent on my investiture. In the marriage that we're talking about, the metaphor of the marriage is the third level of the marriage. Now what's the third level of the marriage? How do we define that? Can't define it. But as long as they admit that they're married, then the third level is there. A couple that comes for counseling. There's nothing happening on the conscious or superconscious level. They're not communicating properly. They don't understand each other. They don't understand that which you could understand. They're certainly not engaging on this mystery, magical level. So what's left? Central matter. The fact that they came and admit or acknowledge. We'll still hang on to the fact that they are married. That means that the essential bond is there. And we can take it from there and make it suffuse the conscious levels and the superconscious level. As long as they admit that. We're married, we don't know what this means. We don't feel anything on any conscious or transcendent level. But we're married. The proof is we want to make a go of it. So the counselor should know what that means. That means that the essential bond is there. Now just nurture it and allow it expression. And that's the deepest connection. That's beyond experience. It's more than than romance and more than magic. Something more than the meeting of minds and meaningful discussion, which is all necessary. God wants them all. He wants us to connect on all three levels. The essential connection, thank God, we don't have to worry about. It's there. So there's no big deal that we acknowledge that with God, because we can't lose it anyway. No, we can't divorce Him and He can't divorce us. So that's the good news. As long as we bonded on that essential third level. So God said, let's allow that to express itself. That's your task. Go through the process of study, of learning, of self-refinement. Then you'll experience the magic of it all, the 50th level. But the essence is always there. It's always there. That's the third level, the godly level. Okay? So that's why the 6th of Sivan, it could coincide, it could not coincide with day 50. It's really an independent truth. So what's the bottom line? The bottom line is we're now, today was day 20. We're in the process. So God is saying, get to know me, we got to talk, understand, let's learn. Got to go through the hard work of communicating. And it's effort, toil. What's going to await you at the end of this? Not just a fully expressed conscious connection, but you'll connect on this beautiful, magical, mystical connection. And why is this all going to happen? And how can it all happen? Despite years or decades of ignorance and being elsewhere. Because essentially, God says, we were always connected. And any time, therefore, we can build it all up. Because, as the bumper sticker has it, we never lost it. Well, this used to be in the 80s. I found J. So there was, we came out with, we never lost it. I found God through J. We never lost it. Because the essential connection is there, then anytime we want, this is available. We're Jews. We admit that. We're married. Okay, God says, we're married. Let's feel it. Let's live it. Let's enjoy each other. That's the counting of the Omer. Enjoy each other on these two levels of immanence and transcendence. And that requires effort. And even if we slip up, so we have the comfort of knowing that, again, that essence bond is just unseverable.